When this happened, you talked about it on The Fan.
Manning calling signal, takes the snap, looks left, off the left, first is wide open, touchdown Giants, and a left corner of the end zone.
Touchdown.
With 35 seconds to go, the Giants regain the lead.
When New York sports happens, talk about it here. The Fan, 101.9 FM, and always live on the free Odyssey app.
She stood in the street.
Big Bottle here with you on The Fan. 3 hours down on a 5 hour midnight ride. 2 hours more to go. Got you right here at 888-808-1019. Me and Rami rolling with you until the warm up show. Obviously, the Mets yesterday drop a series to the Oakland A's as they are trying to find their way back into the good graces of the National League pennant race. They are two games out of the wild card as of right now, and they're fighting with Atlanta. And to blow a 5-0 lead to that team and what that game could have meant. I mean, that's the worst loss of the year for the Mets. And then you add the nonsense of the first pitch and Hawk Tua girl throwing out the first pitch. And Rami just reminded me again, I saw it before, but it's all a joke. Just jokes. And I saw Sal was not, it was not funny to Sal, and I understand his point. I don't have a moral problem. I don't consider the first pitch of a baseball game to be hallowed ground, unless, like at a playoff game, maybe. Or
you're right about the Kardashians, by the way, multiple times in L.A., all of them.
Right, have thrown out the first pitch. Now, right. Again, I don't know. I'm not trying to knock the Kardashians. I don't care, but most people believe Kim became famous because of a sex tape. And I don't think anyone would bat an eye at Kim Kardashian throwing out the first pitch. Now, she's become famous for other reasons since then. She's been married to famous people. The TV show is wildly successful. And she's been to the White House to speak on prison reform. But Hawk Tua girl can't throw out a first pitch in a Met game?
Hawk Tua!
Who did that?
That is the combination of Al and JJ.
Oh, my God.
Brought to you by Eddie.
The two I know. Did you play it, or is Eddie in the other room right now?
No, I just played
them. Oh, okay.
I just reached back and played it.
Yeah, because you were like facing the other way. That's what threw me off.
Yeah, I'm pouring my coffee over here.
But so I don't have a problem with it. I mean, I understand it was camp day, which is a bunch of kids in the ballpark, but like, did they show the video on the big screen? Like, I don't think it's that big a deal, but it does add, and that's why Sal was upset. It adds to the LOL Mets, let's be honest. And now they are the Hawk Tua Mets until they win. If they win this, if they go on a losing streak that puts them out of playoff contention, everyone will go back, just like we went back to Grimace, just like we go to OMG. That's how the Mets operate.
Well, Sal's at least consistent. He hated Grimace at the beginning.
Agreed. And so do I. I hated the Grimace thing. I thought I agreed with Sal 100%. It's not about you're not making it about the team. You're giving the credence to this BS, and it's not about no fun. I'm all for having fun, but like you're trying to get back into a season. The team's playing great, and it's like, oh, Grimace. Like, who cares? Like Grimace throughout the first pitch, a fictional fast food character. Like, and we're hung up on who's throwing out the first pitch, but it becomes a story and it gives them a reason to be laughed at. It gives them a reason for headlines like this when Sal yells about it from awful announcing. WFAN Sal Licata unloads on Hawk Tua girl. Like the jokes write themselves.
Hawk Tua!
That's a good one. They set themselves up to be the butt of jokes. That's the problem with it. They set themselves up for this, and if you knew they were, especially if they were going to quote-unquote blow the game, you knew this was going to be an issue. And of course, only the Mets, you knew they would blow a lead. Like, you just can't make it up. You cannot make it up.
The bullpen slobbered all over themselves.
Oh, my God. You see? Being weird now. There's a bunch of puns. There's a bunch of jokes. That's the whole point. Even idiots like us can come up with clever puns about this. It goes on forever. I saw Big Zoo tweet out, the ump should have checked her for sticky stuff.
That actually, I saw Stu Finer quote tweeted that. So that, you know, Pete Alonso was caught with his pants down on that strike three call.
Yeah, that's it. You have set yourself up to be mocked and laughed at. And after you get past all that, it was an important freaking game. It was a game that makes you feel like this season is slipping through their fingers. It's a game when you look at it, whether it's, again, the offense not coming through with runners in scoring position, where they go 2-for-11 with runners in scoring position after going, what, 4-for-16? And, like, they've been right there with the White Sox as some of the worst, the two worst teams, although the White Sox might have actually picked it up, beating up on the Yankees the other night. But they're one of the worst teams in baseball since the All-Star break with runners in scoring position, and that's just not going to cut it for this team in particular because they need their offense. And they also need their best weapon in the bullpen, Buto, who I have no idea why he's pitching in a 7-1 loss. These games are far too important to be laughed at. They're far too important for the offense to struggle. They're far too important to be not able to have your best weapon out of the bullpen. Like, I leave that game. It's far too important to blow a 5-run lead. Far too important. And that's what's frustrating about that loss last night. That's what's frustrating about the loss of this series. And looking forward, as they go on to take on Miami, who, you know it, I know it, has been the bane of their existence, the thorn in their side, even when they're terrible. The last game at Shea. Every opportunity. Right, 2007. Every opportunity this Marlins team has crushed you. And they've played terrible against their division, except the Mets. They're one of the worst teams in baseball. The Mets need to show up and to come off that sweep against Seattle and play this kind of baseball at home, whether it's obviously getting lit up and Blackburn having his worst start as a Met in game one, or whether it's Quintana not being able to throw strikes, the bullpen not having their best pitcher end, not being able to throw strikes, the offense not coming through with any runs after the fourth inning. You cannot not show up for that series off of what happened in Seattle. And now you cannot not show up for this series against Miami after what just happened to Oakland. And especially what you're about to face. Like, that's the thing is mainly where they are and where they're about to go. Because where they're about to go after this three-game set against Miami is to welcome in the Baltimore Orioles, who have the second-best record in all of baseball. And then they're going to go on the road to play 4 against San Diego and then a three-game set against Arizona, the two hottest teams in baseball, bar none. Bar none! These next 12 games, 13 games, are going to decide the Mets season. When they head to Chicago at the end of the month to go play the lousy White Sox, and they have 3 straight series against the second best record in baseball and the 2 hottest teams in baseball, we will know exactly where they stand. Because as much as the Atlanta Braves have floundered, I cannot imagine this group that is a proven winner, that had won a World Series in 2021, that has won this division every year over the last 5 or 6. I find it hard to believe they're going to fall to you. You are going to have to go get them. And if it falls too far behind, If you're looking at the 6-game gap between you and Atlanta, at you and San Diego and Arizona, and it's the same thing between you and Atlanta in a week, you're gonna have a major problem. This season is on the borderline of falling apart. It's not there yet, and I still think they can have a big series against Miami. But right now, their season is right on the line of falling apart. And whether it's Alvarez needing to wake up, Pete Alonso needing to wake up, this rotation needing to throw strikes, and this bullpen needing to figure it out, and figuring out a way to best utilize your best weapon in the bullpen in Buehler, something needs to be figured out because they can't lose to this Miami team. They just can't because it is too tough a stretch. Now, could they turn around and end the hot streak of Arizona and San Diego? That'd be one hell of a story. That'd be one hell of a turning point of this Mets season. But I can't bank on it, not the way those guys are playing. So they better figure out a way to go beat Miami this week. And the Yankees head to Detroit for a three-game set against the lousy Tigers. And, of course, Trey Sweeney, I think his first name is Trey, off the top of my head. Sweeney, the former Yankee prospect who is now with Detroit after being traded there from Los Angeles. The Yankees traded him to the Dodgers. He's been traded to Detroit, has been called up, and he's going to make his major league debut with the Tigers. That's an interesting little side note. But this Yankee team coming off winning the last two games against Chicago, the heroics of Soto, the record-breaking performance from Judge, and they head into a series where they can't afford to lose either because they are nip and tuck with this Baltimore Orioles team. And you're going to go play these bad teams this stretch of baseball from the Yankees. We talked about the schedule. Right? They have the easiest schedule of all contenders down the stretch. They should win this division easy with who they're playing. Well, nothing has been easy, including the White Sox, for the New York Yankees. And Trevino is going to be healthy. He was activated today from the lineup. And I'll tell you this right now, Austin Wells still better be the freaking catcher. And even if it's a right-handed, left-handed platoon, I don't like it. Because they see a lot of left-handed pitchers because their numbers are so bad against the teams manipulate their rotation to make sure they throw lefties to the New York Yankees. So I understand, oh, hey, listen, you have a platoon. Obviously, Wells is the better half. You'd rather be the left-handed hitter in a platoon, face more right-handed pitchers. You can live like that. No, Wells is the starting catcher, and Trevino plays when Wells needs a break. Plain and simple. I don't like the idea of a platoon. Wells has been too damn important to this team, too damn good in the middle of that lineup. Too damn good, and they need him. So let's talk a little football here now off of it real quick as we'll get back to the phone calls, 888-808-1019. I just want to mention Tom Brady for a second because I got to tell you, I don't know what it is about Tom Brady, and I know as a Giant fan, people don't understand, and I'm usually with this because I hate the teams that beat me. I hate the teams that make me sick. I hate the teams that have made me cry, right? That's typically how I feel. I hate the Eagles because I'm a Giant fan. They make me cry. I hate the Red Sox. I hate the Detroit Tigers. They've made me cry a bunch. Hate the Tigers. Hate the teams that beat me. And Tom Brady, as a Giant fan, never beat me in a big spot. That's the truth. Even during the regular season, they have the famous win before to go 16-0. And then, of course, the rematch in the Super Bowl went the Giants' way, and they beat the Giants and Bill Belichick and Tom Brady twice in Super Bowls, we know. But then even from that point on in the regular season, I remember big wins against Tom Brady and the Patriots. Like, Tom Brady has cost me zero pain, and at his expense, I've had my greatest joys. So typically, you would think that's a guy that wouldn't bother me, and yet, here we are, Mr. Never Wants to Go Away. And I find him completely obnoxious. And we're going to find out whether or not he's a good broadcaster, and my instinct is he's going to be a good broadcaster. My gut tells me I'm going to love him doing the games. But again, he puts out a video where he's in, you know, unbelievable, phenomenal shape. And he just keeps saying the same, like he won't go away. I just want to make sure all those young bucks in the NFL know that if I still wanted to come out of retirement, they got something to deal with. What kind of comment is that? I just want to make sure all of the young bucks in the NFL know that if I still wanted to come out of retirement, they still got something to deal with. Do you want me to translate that? Here's the Tom Brady translation. I just wanted you to know, because you haven't heard from me in a week, that I'm in phenomenal shape And I'm going to make you wonder every single week if I'm coming back or not, because I need to be in your mind. Otherwise, who am I and what am I? You're only the winningest quarterback in history. Go, and you're about to be in our living rooms every single week. Just do that. Why do you have to constantly remind us that your regimen of avocado ice cream and raw milk or whatever it is you're drinking and eating is put you in a position where you can still run and play and jump and skip and whatever else? I'm so sick of Tom Brady. Just shut up and be a broadcaster already. Or come out of retirement and play. I just want to make sure the young buck, just, it's so obnoxious. I don't even know if he means it. It's just like a clever, phony thing to say. Like, it's, I don't know why, but it bothers me so much that this guy continues to do things like this. And if you go 2 weeks without a Tom Brady story, you got to hear something. Something's got to come up. And you know where this, you know where it bothers me? You know what I think the beginning of my Tom Brady hate came from? I think it came from the idea that he was in the championship game every year, right? They made the championship game every year, every year, every year, every year. And we heard the same talking points about the tandem between him and Belichick. Is it the greatest of all time? Is he the greatest coach of all time? The greatest quarterback of all time? Blah, blah, blah. We had that conversation all over. And it just started to feel like it was treated as if the NFL wouldn't be the NFL if Tom Brady and the great New England Patriots weren't playing playoff games. Well, I'll tell you right now. They're not going to be playing playoff games for a while. They just traded off Judon. They don't care. They're tanking. May actually threw the ball fairly well in his preseason game after having what has been talked about as a miserable camp where the fifth-round draft pick is out playing him in camp, depending on who you listen to. They're going to be awful, and the NFL will just be fine. It'll be just fine. Without Tom Brady, without the New England Patriots, without Bill Belichick, we'll be fine. He's doing a podcast on fantasy football. Go check into Bill Belichick's fantasy football contest. I can't wait to hear what that's going to be like. I can't wait to hear the analysis. I'm sure he'll be very good at it, but my thought would be sometimes he'll just give you, you know, can you imagine? So who's a sleeper this week? We're a sleeper this week. I got Olave. Oh, great. What a sleeper. But I'm sure Bill Belichick will be great at that. Fine. I'll listen to his podcast about fantasy football.
He's historically bad the last few years at drafting skill position players,
true.
By the way.
There's no doubt. And that's why, you know, I think maybe even Atlanta was right to not bring him in if he was forcing himself into the front office. I think he should just transition into being a head coach. And maybe this will humble him as he sits every week doing a fantasy football podcast and realizing I should be in the NBA, in the NFL right now. But like, it just started to feel like it was like, what would the NFL be without Tom? Oh, every week we need, you know, what would the playoffs be without Tom Brady? I'm so sick of it. Then he goes to Tampa Bay and he wins a freaking Super Bowl. I'm just tired of him. I'm Tom Brady saturated. And these comments every week just to keep himself relevant is driving me nuts. 888-808-1019. Let's go to Dave in Comac. Been hanging for a little bit. What's up, Dave?
Hey, how are you?
Good. How are you, buddy? What's going on?
I was reading something on this Facebook group I'm a member of called All Things Islanders. And some fans were dumb enough to say that they paid to go meet Sorokin. And I was like, you know, back in the 80s, we didn't pay anything for autographs or to meet. Like, I bowled in a bowl-a-thon for Big Brothers, Big Sisters out in Stony Brook. Clark Gillies was there. We didn't pay anything to get his autograph or anything like that. That's nonsense.
Yeah, I mean, I hear you. But there's these events where it's a show. It promotes a bunch of people coming to try and get autographs. You don't have to go. And actually, I think you can get in without having to get autographs. You can go see these people. But yeah, if you want an autograph, you got to compensate the people for their time. And then
You know what? Years ago, I don't know if you're familiar with Comac, on Hop Hog Road is a place called the Suffolk YJCC, right?
Yeah.
Rob LaFontaine was there years ago. Of course, coincidentally, I was a gym membership over there. But, you know, I'm sure there's people there that probably didn't have a membership, knew he was going to be there, and they didn't pay anything to get in to see Pat LaFontaine or get his autograph? I didn't pay anything to get his autograph. That's ridiculous.
I'm sorry. I hear you. There are times, you know, if a guy wants to just show up to an event and do autograph signings, that's fine. But this is a designed multi-people thing to go sign autographs and pay for it. I mean, I personally don't care enough about it. I don't really even care about autographs, to be honest with you. I'd rather just have a conversation, shake a hand, and talk to someone than get their signature. I've never been one for that, but the only thing I ever got signed, and I still have it, the only thing that I thought was cool that I got signed was I was a season ticket holder for the Yankees. I had like a 16-game package, you know, whatever, in Mariano Rivera's last year of his career. It was the only season me and my wife did it before we were saving for a wedding and before we were saving for a house and before we were dumping our money into our kids. And I actually had a little bit extra to do something like a 16-game Yankee plan. And before I had all the inroads to just get tickets whenever I want. I have a season credential now. Sorry, honey, you can stay home with the kids. I'm going to the game. But we had the season tickets up in the upper deck. And this was back before, you know, they actually got that booklet. It was the coolest day ever that I got the booklet in the mail with all the tickets. And it wasn't his last game or anything, but I had a ticket from that season with Mariano Rivera's face on it. And Mariano Rivera came in one day, we talked with Mike, and I asked him to sign that ticket. That's the only time I've really ever, I thought that would be cool. It wasn't his last game, but it was a game of his last season, and it had his face on the ticket, and he signed it. Like, other than that, I don't know if I've ever asked or wanted or cared about signatures. I'd rather just, you know, have a handshake and a conversation than a signature or a memo, like a photo, I guess. Like, if I met, my hero is Paul McCartney. That's my hero. I love Paul McCartney. And if I would ever meet Paul, I don't even think I would ask for a picture necessarily. I certainly wouldn't ask for an autograph. I would just, you know, want to, like, shake his hand, look at him, say hi.
You'd want, like, a 10-minute interview, though.
Well, yeah, of course. Well, listen, Paul Rosenberg once told me he would try very hard to get Paul McCartney on the show. If you think you can get Paul McCartney, we got a lot of things coming your way if you can get Paul McCartney on this show.
A Mariano Rivera signed ticket?
You got it. I don't think it's worth anything. But
is that a big no-no here?
Yeah, I mean, it depends. You kind of ask, you know, nicely. You know, I was part of the show. He was in the control room. Talking to me for a minute. I felt like it was fine. But yeah, like if you were out in the newsroom doing another shift or something and like you came in and was like pestering someone, yeah, it's a little bit of a no-no. But no, it's you know, famously Al and Joe Beningo got into it once over an autograph situation. So I wouldn't say a no-no, but have you ever heard the story about the Alex Rodriguez day? That was one of
when he was here with Mike.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I know a lot.
Well, so he comes storming in after a meeting with Major League Baseball and Rob Manfred, who was running the investigation, I guess, against him. So they had a meeting. It didn't go well. He storms out, comes right to WFAN. We knew about it for a little bit, and he shows up with his team, and they all come in here, and he sits right. Mike is sitting here. Alex Rodriguez is sitting right there, and Monzo, I think it was Monzo. It might have been me. I don't remember. I think it was Monzo. Gets him a glass of water. Just a regular cup from the water fountain and water. And he's drinking it, you know, during the show. He gets up and leaves, and nobody asked him for an interview. I mean, that was certainly not the time. That would have been a no-no to come in here and ask Alex Rodriguez for an autograph that day. But he leaves, and as he's walking out, the newsroom is just packed with everyone from, you know, sales, you know, every department. Every other station here, like, it was big news that Alex Rodriguez had left that meeting pissed off and came right to Mike. So he's walking out, newsroom is crazy packed, and someone in the sales team walks into the control room and talking to us about the interview a little bit, and they say, that's where he was sitting, right? And they point to the seat. We go, yeah. Was that his water that he was drinking? Yeah. Do you mind if I go take that cup? I was like, No, go for it.
That is so odd.
Yeah.
And I remember where I was listening. That was one of those interviews. I remember where I was sitting listening to that.
So I was wondering if that person like ran down to the elevator and said, do you think you could sign this cup, Alex? Like,
that would be crazy.
But yeah, no, they
especially that day.
They wanted the cup. We want the cup.
Oh, yeah.
So that was an interesting day. Terry in Emania. What's up, Terry?
Good morning, great one.
Thank you very much. Good morning, Terry. How are you?
I'm holding on. I was listening earlier.
Yes.
I want to tell you why you can't say the greatest of all time.
Okay.
You can only say the greatest I ever saw. I'm 76.
Yeah.
My beloved father was old enough to be my grandfather.
Mm-hmm.
He was born in 1893.
Wow.
Okay?
Yep.
He said the greatest pitcher he ever saw was Christy Mathewson.
Right.
I don't even think there's film footage on Mathewson.
Right.
The greatest I ever saw, Whitey Ford. Why don't I say Koufax? I never saw him live. I only saw him on the tube.
Right.
You've got to
put it
in that perspective.
I appreciate you feel that way, Terry. I don't know if I feel that I am, you know, I cannot say... In my opinion, I do look at the numbers. I don't know why I'm limited to what my eyes told me. Jerry feels the same way. I heard him talking this morning or yesterday morning about, hey, you know, that was there even color in real life? Like everything was black and white on the television. Like there's no proof of how could I even compare? And I get that. I do. And I'm not trying to tell you Aaron Judge is the best hitter ever. I'm not trying to tell you Barry Bonds is the best hitter ever. I'm willing to go with best I've ever seen when it comes to players who are playing the game at the same level. Ohtani is doing things that I know Babe Ruth, like a guy on Twitter was mentioning Babe Ruth. And if you look at it, Babe Ruth had an incredible season in 1916 pitching, but he didn't hit as much and didn't have the hitting numbers. There's like 1 year, 1919 for the Boston Red Sox, where he really, you know, or 1918, excuse me, where he pitched really well and hit really well. They started to transition him to a hitter in 1918. So maybe there's 2 years where you could say he's as good as Ohtani. I'm willing to say that, I guess. Listen, I'm not saying it's a clear cut. He's obviously better than Babe Ruth, but him and Babe are the only two.
I had no idea he made a couple spot starts for the Yankees in the 30s.
Yeah.
I just looked that up.
Yeah, but he stopped pitching, yeah.
Complete games both times.
Yeah. He stopped pitching. Now, Ohtani might stop pitching. I feel like I'm still okay with saying the best ever, even though I've never seen it, because this guy is doing things like we haven't seen. But my answer always, the best baseball player ever was, before this, was Babe Ruth. But... because of the nature of him doing both. But I still don't know if he did it on to this extent of both at the same time. Eric and Ron Kokomo, what's up, Eric?
Hey, C-Mac, good morning. How you doing?
Good morning. How are you?
Good, good. Hope you enjoy your trip.
Thank you very much, yes.
You know, I just want to throw my two cents in on this thing with the autographs that Dave McCormack was just talking about.
Yeah.
Look, I go to Comic-Con on occasion. You know, you go there expecting to... you know, pay a fee for autographs. I mean, that's how it's set up. I'm sure.
Right.
I'm sure Fanatics Fest is going to be the same way. But there were a couple of occasions outside of that. For example, he mentioned bowling. I mean, I used to, you know, bowl in. You probably know the area at North Levittown area, Island Trees. One night, Frank Viola came walking in. You know, after a game, I don't know if he was staying in the area or whatever, but he came in. I was bowling the men's league. It was like, you know, midnight. He comes strolling in. A few of us went over, chatted with him. We got his autograph. There was no money exchanged, but it was a nice, friendly, you know, thing. But, there are times you can go in. It doesn't mean that every time somebody shows up, they can ask for money. I mean...
I know. If there's these design... That's what I said to him. If there's these design events where, you know... they want people to come in, buy a ticket, you know, the money's going to, you know, charities or whatever, and, you know, they get people to come here, and part of it is that, you know, to get them here, you
pay. That's the arrangement. I mean, I, I only, I mean, look, yeah, so, you know, so, I mean, some of the, I'll be honest, some of the requests, you know, are a little outrageous depending sure. On the person.
Right.
I mean, the only one I really spent for was William Shatner, which was a huge delight of mine. That was $75.
Want your money.
But, yeah, right. But hey, you know, I had his autobiography. I had him sign it. It was excellent.
Yeah.
You know, but look, I also went to where I grew up. I went to the same high school as Steve Guttenberg, you know, from Police Academy.
Guttenberg.
Yeah.
How about that?
Yeah. So
Eric and Ron Conkman and Steve Guttenberg, the Goots.
Yeah.
Unbelievable.
He would pop in.
He was a movie star in the 80s, no doubt.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Oh, no. He was in Police Academy, Three Men and a Baby, yeah. Cocoon.
Yeah.
Love Cocoon.
Yep. So, but he would pop in on occasion. He was old, friendly with a lot of people still in the area.
Yeah.
And, all the kids went nuts and everything. He never came in and asked for money. He came in just,
right. No. Yeah. Well, of course. Right. I mean, yeah. But, right, Eric, if there's an event that's being promoted, much like the Javits Center, make sure to go check it out. They're going to have guys, the fans going to be there all day over the weekend. I heard Keith say he's going to do Sunday. I know, what's the schedule? Do you have a... You know what the schedule is for this weekend?
As we talked about before we went on the air, I'm not on any email list around
no,
here.
No email list for you?
But I think starting already on Friday, maybe today, I think the midday show might be there already.
Yeah,
today.
No, yeah, they are. I think they are, yeah. So it should be, that should be a great event. Go check it out. And don't pay what you don't want to pay. Who is there, don't go get that Sal Licata autograph if you don't want. I'm sure Sal won't charge anything for you. I'm sure if you can catch him in the right mood, hopefully he's okay. 888-808-1019.
Might unload on you.
He might unload on you. All over you. 888-808-1019. McMonagle with you on the fan. We'll be right back.
6464. Stuck in traffic and need to vent? Dial the fan. 888-808-1019. Powered by Paramount Plus. Stream the NFL on CBS live on Paramount Plus.
I keep forgetting to give you a song. 888-808-1019. McMonagle here with you. I just saw Eddie reminded me of the conversation this morning and my answer, Barry Bonds, to the question... Who's the greatest baseball player of all time? When clearly I know it's Ohtani. A slip up, minor slip up. But speaking about Bonds, and with Hawk Tua Girls, speaking about maybe baseball porn, I just watched something that MLB Network put out that is unbelievable. There is a video that MLB Network just put out. I don't know if it's a documentary or I don't know what they're doing. One of a kind. It's profiling the career of Greg Maddux. So it's just that if you have a minute and you want to look at, go to MLB Network's Twitter, probably their Instagram as well, whatever. Maybe even on the website. Go to MLB Network. They just put up a video of Greg Maddux and Barry Bonds, both of them breaking down an at-bat from the late 90s. I think 1997, I think they said. But it's from the late 90s. An at-bat between Barry and Greg Maddux. And it is so fascinating to hear them both talk about it. And they say the same things. It's amazing. Like, they show the at-bat, both of them, they're in different rooms. They're not together. They're doing the interviews completely separately, different locations, whenever. And they're both given a tablet, and they watch the at-bat and react to it. And the first pitch is a high fastball cutter that Barry Bonds gets beat on. And Barry Bonds is watching it, and he says... jam me on a high fastball. And he goes, and watching, he goes, now I'm thinking he's going to go. Now, it's the first time they're seeing the at-bat. It's got to be impossible for him to remember this exact at-bat. But he says, hey, jam me inside through that pitch, got me. Now he's going to try and go low and away with a changeup or something because he thinks he's got me sped up. He thinks he's got me thinking I got to get my bad speed up. So he's going to try and throw something soft and away. And then they cut to Greg Maddux, and he goes, well, I got his bat speed up, so I'm thinking soft and away. And I'm just like, oh, my God. Like, they're so good at this. Now, that doesn't take a genius. We own the high and tight, low and away, soft, you know, high and hard, low and soft. Like, it's not, you listen to David Cohn give a broadcast, he gives that to you 10 times a game. But still, like, the idea, they use the same words about, he's got me sped up. Like, they, and they go through the at-bat, and he says, and then after that, he takes the pitch, and it's a changeup that he doesn't even, it's a great take, he barely looks at it, and Maddux is like, well, that's a great changeup, and he didn't even consider it. So, he's like, now I'm probably, you know, I'm thinking he's probably thinking, now with my experience, he's probably thinking inside, but at that time, I probably wasn't smart enough to recognize it. And then they cut the Bonds, and he's like, well, now I'm thinking inside again. And I'm always looking for that inside fastball. And sure enough, he throws an inside fastball, Bonds it hits for a home run. But like the two of them breaking down the at-bat and their thought process and how good Barry Bonds was at this. Like we talk about, I said he was the best hitter, like, listening to him speak and figuring out Greg Maddux, who, as good as Greg Maddux, I mean, Greg Maddux had great stuff, don't get me wrong. Greg Maddux and that two-seam fastball to lefties, it looked like it was going to hit you in the hip, and then it came back over the inside corner. But Greg Maddux is, you know, the thinking man's pitcher. He didn't go out there and beat you with straight filth, even though he had it. He thought the game, and he knew how to get you out, until here Barry Bonds be a step ahead of him in this at-bat. And just talking it through, it was so fascinating to hear them both on opposite ends break down the at-bat in the same way. Like, it was unbelievable. Now he thinks he's got me sped up, so he's going to go low and away. And then to cut right to Maddux, he's like, well, I got him sped up, so I'm going to try and... I was just like, these guys, it's amazing, the inner thoughts. And that's why, that's part of the reason I love baseball so much, and it's my favorite sport. I understand that the nuances and the thought process and the game planning that goes into football, right? And how intelligent you have to be. And I mean, just listen to an offensive game plan. Like, Cole, we were just watching Hard Knocks with the Giants. Like, listen to, you know, elevator shaft 35, B-neck V. Like, who's the V? Who's the B-neck? Where's the elevator shaft? Like, I mean, it's just like, it's crazy. Like, don't get me wrong. It's absolutely bonkers that they have to know where everybody's going, and these, the long play calling, that famous video of Chris Sims completely just having no idea. Well, you know, as Gruden is giving him the wide yellow banana. Like, it's crazy. Don't get me wrong. But the thing that's I love most about baseball is, even though it's a team sport, it's that mental game of chess between the hitter and the pitcher. And to hear those two, who are, you know, two of the greatest to ever do it, go through an at-bat, their thought process, and hear how similar it was and how they both recognized the same things and attacked it the same way, it was fascinating. It was really, if you have a minute and a half, and who doesn't, go watch it. And then I'm going to watch the documentary, because that, if they're going to like do that with him and other guys, or they're going to break down at-bats, I could watch that. I could watch Barry Bonds and Greg Maddux break down their interactions and their the at-bats against each other all day long. It was extremely fascinating. Extremely fascinating. And since I'm giving you baseball stuff that's extremely fascinating, and we're talking about my dumb arguments that everybody hates, let's talk about Clay Holmes for a second. What do you think? Let's talk about the Yankee closer, because I just saw something that I found a little bit fascinating, so I wanted to give it to you and see what you thought about it. Clay Holmes, who's clearly this Yankee closer, and how everybody, I think most people understand that right now, myself included, the Yankee bullpen's a major problem. The pitching's a major problem. Everything's a major problem, right? But the offense, even though it had its moments there of lulls, and we do understand that how important Judge and Soto are, I think we are a little bit removed from it being a two-man team. Now, I think we're seeing some better at-bats from guys. Obviously, Wells has really made a big difference. Stanton's coming back, and he hit that big home run the other day against Texas. So, I mean, I think we're feeling better about the offense. They do lead the American League in runs scored. They are in first place, tied for first with the best record, you know, half a game behind Cleveland for the best record in Major League Baseball. And I do think Cole, Hill, and Rodon have kind of stabilized the top of the rotation. I know Hill wasn't very good against Chicago, but it's kind of a one-off. And if you look at it, Hill's going to have some opportunity now not to pitch as much. We're worried about his innings. With a couple of timely days off here, he might only have to make two starts in the next 2.5 weeks. Like, there could be some manipulating as opposed to moving into the bullpen. Like, these are the kind of things I was looking at. You can manipulate the schedule here a little bit and not have to throw Luis Hill for the next couple of, for as much over the next 2 weeks. But obviously the back end of the bullpen has scared everybody, and rightfully so. They were terrible against Texas. Even Clay Holmes, who I think is better than most people do, was hanging on for dear life. Obviously, the addition of Leiter has not been good. He had two good appearances early on. He's been brutally bad since then. Weaver just had his worst appearance of the year. We're waiting on still Hamilton and Efros and different guys to come back. This back end of the bullpen scary. And everybody starts with the closer. And I hear it all the time that Clay Holmes is not a good enough closer, and Clay Holmes will cost him in the playoffs. But the number one argument that I have a real problem with is the strikeout argument of Clay Holmes. And everyone says it, bar none, everybody says it. You need to miss bats to be a closer in this league. If you want to be a starting closer, if you want to be a closer, if you want to be a closer for a winning team, if you want to win games in the postseason, if you want to be a legitimate, dominant closer, you have to miss bats. When you put balls in play, bad things happen. I've been having this argument with everybody. And while I agree that the Yankee bullpen in general doesn't have enough swing and miss, you need to bring in guys in certain situations to get out of jams with strikeouts. Totally agree, because bad things do happen when you put the ball in play. Of course. I don't necessarily think it has to be from the closer. I think the closer can come into a clean inning and be just fine not missing bats. And I've used a bunch of different examples, and I'm going to use another one now. Because if you tell me flat out, forget everything else, that Clay Holmes, the style of pitcher he is, the inability to miss bats eliminates him from being a closer, that you can't be a dominant closer without the strikeout, and Clay Holmes doesn't miss enough bats, and it's a real problem, and he can't be the closer, which I hear over and over and over again. Clay Holmes can't be the closer because he doesn't strike out enough guys. Well, let me ask you, who is the most dominant closer in the game today? And I think I would argue, and I think most people would agree with me, that Emmanuel Clase of the Cleveland Guardians is the most dominant closer in baseball right now. He's pitching to a .64 ERA. He leads the league in saves at 37. He is the most dominant closer in baseball right now. Let's take a deeper look into his numbers real quick. Emmanuel Clase has pitched 56 innings. He has 49 strikeouts in those 56 innings for a strikeout per nine rate of 7.8. 56 innings, 49 strikeouts, 7.8 strikeouts per nine. What do you say we take a look at Clay Holmes? Just for fun. Let's see what it looks like. Clay Holmes, he's pitched in 48 innings. So that's, quick math, 8 innings less than Emmanuel Clase. He has 51 strikeouts. That would be 2 more strikeouts than Emmanuel Clase. And his strikeout per nine is 9.6. Clay Holmes, Mr. Can't be a closer because he doesn't miss enough bats. Clay Holmes, Mr. Can't be a closer because he doesn't strike people out. That same Clay Holmes is striking out almost 2 more batters per 9 innings. He's pitched 8 less innings and has 2 more strikeouts. He is a more effective strikeout pitcher than Emmanuel Clase. He misses more bats than Emmanuel Clase. He has more strikeouts than Emmanuel Clase. Now, am I saying Clay Holmes is as good a closer? Absolutely not. Is he as good a pitcher? Absolutely not. Do you want to go over whip and walk rate? Absolutely. Light years better. Emmanuel Clase is a far better closer. But if you are going to try and tell me that Clay Holmes can't be a closer because he doesn't strike people out, if you are going to tell me that Emmanuel Clase, that Clay Holmes is a automatic non-starter for a playoff closer because he doesn't strike people out. And when you rely on contact and the ball gets put in play, bad things happen. I point you no further than the best closer in Major League Baseball who misses less bats and strikes out less people. Clay Holmes needs to clean it up. His whiff rate is way lower than Clay Holmes. He is missing less bats. He is putting the ball in play more often. And yet he's the most dominant closer in the game. So you want to get on Clay Holmes? I understand. Get off that he doesn't strike out enough people to be a dominant closer, because it's flat out wrong in every way. It is inaccurate. It is not true. He walks too many people? Okay. That's fine. You want to talk about the infield defense of the Cleveland Guardians compared to the Yankees? Bingo, that's your best argument if we're going to talk about putting the balls in play. But just the blanket statement of Clay Holmes, this is what happens when you have a closer who relies on balls put in play. This is what happens when you have a closer who doesn't strike people out. I hear it all day long, every day. The most dominant closer in the game misses less bats, strikes out less people. That's all I'm saying. 888-808-1019. McMonagle here with you. 1 hour left. We'll take your phone calls. And we'll get you till 5 o'clock in the warm-up show. McMonagle here with you on The Fan.